Creepy Unsolved Media. Hey guys, Dylan here, and before we begin tonight's show, you know, I wanted to take a moment to thank all of you. Your listenership means the world to us, and we could not do all of this without you. If you guys have future guest suggestions, or if you want to share stories of your own with us about your encounters with the paranormal, please reach out to us. You can call us and leave a voicemail at 814-320-3432. That is 814-320-3432, and we will get back to you. You can also reach out to us by email. So send us an email at creepyunsolvedmedia@gmail.com. While I have your attention, I would also like to invite you to join our Patreon. You can simply search Creepy Unsolved on patreon.com to find us. In our $6 a month tier, you'll gain access to awesome benefits like ad-free content and early access episodes. Every episode that I produce on Creepy Unsolved will be on there as soon as I am done editing, so you'll be able to listen weeks in advance. Once again, thank you so much for your time, and we greatly appreciate your listenership. Let's begin.
You're listening to Creepy Unsolved.
If they got all the bodies. And so when I was trying to do EVP sessions, I was talking to this woman, her name's Sarah Ware, but I was also trying to talk to anybody else. Mm-hmm. However, right off of the trail, there's a little clearing that has a picnic table and a fire pit. And I decided to ride, I ride my bike on the trail. And so I rode off of the trail into that little clearing and the picnic table. And I sat at the picnic table and had an EVP session. While I'm sitting there, the trail is just 20 feet away from me. However, there's a thicket of woods that separates the trail and the picnic table. And there's two kind of big trees that are in this thicket. And in between the trees is clear. And meaning there's no foliage or anything right there. I can see through to the trail. And I saw somebody, like I thought it was a person jogging, go by those trees.
Wow.
And where they would have to have continued on the trail, I was looking at the opening of that clearing that I was sitting in, waiting for them to go by. First of all, I wasn't hearing the crunching of leaves with them running. And the person never appeared at the entrance to that clearing with the picnic table. And it just looked like a person. It was a woman. She was maybe 5'8 or so. She had black hair and a ponytail. She was wearing like lighter colored clothing. And I saw him, and there was no creepy feeling or anything. It just looked like this person going
by. That's wild.
I know. I couldn't believe it. And of course, like, I mean, I was doing an audio thing, you know what I mean? So like, I didn't have any cameras going or anything, but it was wild. Like, I'm pretty sure I saw a ghost because there was nobody on the trail, and mm-hmm. I would have seen somebody run past that entrance to the clearing. Like I didn't know what to make of it, but it was wild.
That's wow. That's surprising. That I was going to ask, I was like, did you feel like, did you get like the goosebumps or anything?
I just thought it was a person. And then I'm like, wait a minute. I'm only 20 feet away. I'm not even hearing the crunching of leaves. Like, that's wild.
So you didn't pick up anything on the audio recording then?
Well, I don't know. I recorded for like 3 hours out there, so I haven't like listened back to anything. Yeah. I only got back like a couple hours ago. So
that's a lot to scrub through.
Yeah.
I got to grab something. I'll be right back.
All right, well, I was going to cut the intro, but I guess she'll be right back. But yeah, I was listening to a podcast while I was running on the treadmill today, and it was talking about a witch or a shape-shifting witch, and I thought it was really interesting. Guy out hiking alone, he comes up across like a waterfall or whatever, and sitting down there is this like older looking woman. So he like kind of, hey, what's up, whatever, turns, walks away or whatever, and as he's going up the trail to try to get to the top of this waterfall to look over, he notices what he described as a foot coming out from behind a tree, like almost like an invisibility cloak.
Oh, geez. Like a barefoot
foot, like move out from underneath of the cloak. So this man, he walks to the top of the cliff, and when he's up top of it looking down, he hears someone yell to him in this like deep hollow voice, "Hello." And he's looking down there and he can see like this shape, like almost like a glimmer man or like a figure like that down there. So it kind of reminded me of that. But Sabrina is back, and we are live on Creepy Unsolved. You know, as always, me and Sabrina here. And tonight we have two special guests. Nomar Slevic, he is a returning member of Creepy Unsolved. He's wrote multiple books. And tonight's topic, we're going to talk about one of his newer books, Granite Skies. And he brought along a special guest with him, you know, the guy that the book is based off of. So I'll give you guys some time to introduce yourself and just give us your little backstory, stuff along those lines.
Sure. My name is Nomar Slevic, and I'm an author and a researcher in all things paranormal. And I met Mike Stevens here about 4 years ago. And when I met him, I was getting kind of some tidbits of his story. Not even really from him. It was from people that know him. Like, "Hey, Nomar, have you talked to Mike yet about like some of the stuff he's experienced?" I'm like, "No, not really." Well, you know, and then they would tell me a little something. And so I got little tidbits of stories here and there. And then one time I was at this place called the KRI Center for Consciousness Studies. It's defunct now, but it was a center where presentations were held and meetings and all sorts of things. And Mike had this really interesting picture on, I think it was an iPad or something, and it was from a camp in New Hampshire. And there was a beam of light coming down from nowhere, illuminating the grass at this camp. And I was like, "What the fuck is this? Like, we gotta talk more, man." And and come to find out, Mike has had a lifetime of extraterrestrial encounters that are continuing to this day. And Mike and I befriended each other, and we decided to do a project called Granite Skies, which is the book about not only his extraterrestrial happenings, but also the humanity behind it as well. And I can let Mike introduce himself.
So I'm Mike Stevens. I've been a lifelong experiencer. I got involved in paranormal research, and I did that for a while, and I kind of broke off from it because it's just hours of going through audio and video. And if somebody's in need, I was there for that. But my real calling was to just help other experiencers being through what I've been. So now I lead my own group called Granite Sky, kind of where we got the title from the book from. And yeah, kind of like Nomar said, it's really been my whole life. So,
yeah, and just reading the back cover of this book, it really kind of paints a picture of your beginning and like the journey, you know, through the years leading up till now. And, you know, I'll take a moment to read that to kind of paint a picture for what this book is about. So it goes like this. On an early summer's evening in 1983, a four-year-old child was lured away from his home by the sighting of something strange in the sky. A frightened curiosity overtook the child while he stared at the silver craft hovering over the telephone pole. Moments later, he was inside of it. What followed was a lifetime of truly bizarre encounters that traumatized a man to the brink of death. Granite Skies is the true story of Mike Stevens and how he navigated through extraterrestrial terrors that forever scarred his mental health. He is a survivor of trauma that transcends the typical writings of the alien abduction narrative and reveals a lifetime or life after victimization from the author of Otherworldly Encounters, Evidence of UFO Sightings and Abductions. Nomar Slevic pieces together a turbulent biography of a man's fear, torment, acceptance, and eventual hope in a demoralized existence. So sorry for butchering that, but it does, you know, kind of set the narrative for what actually happens in this book. Now, I know me and Nomar talked before on the podcast, and he shared a story about his first, you know, encounter with a UFO. And I was kind of wondering if, you know, there was an earlier connection that kind of, you know, opened Mike, or Mike opened up to you because you have similar connections at such an early age.
I don't really know if there's a connection there, but there's definitely, at the very least, a kinship there. And maybe that's what brought him and I together. Obviously, we had the shared interest of the paranormal, and I was invited multiple times by Mike to this center to, you know, give presentations. And we did like a town hall thing when we were shooting a documentary, and a lot of cool things like that. So we, you know, befriended each other because of this shared interest in the paranormal. But when he and I finally like sat down to discuss his encounters and potentially writing a book about it, that's where it's honestly, it's where it got really heavy. And I think Mike and I like truly became bonded and friends through those interviews and conversations. We had two major interviews together. There were like 3-4 hour interviews that was specifically for the book where everything was recorded. I took a bunch of notes, but we've had multiple, probably uncountable conversations via phone calls and Facebook Messenger about additional things, clarifying questions, additional encounters that he's having to this day, you know, things like that. But the initial, I guess, discussion about this book was probably 2.5-3 years ago now, I would say, Mike.
Yeah, something like that.
And we had a phone call. I forget the catalyst for the phone call. We might have been talking on FB Messenger and we're like, this is dumb. Let's just talk on the phone. And which is a lot of our conversations. And I remember I was sitting in the parking lot of a Burger King for whatever reason. I might have been out Ubering or something. Mm-hmm. I do that on the side to try to help with, you know, make ends meet. Sorry about my camera here. Anyway,
no worries.
And Mike and I ended up having, it was like a 2-hour conversation, something like that. And Mike went through, I'd say at that point, the majority of his major encounters at that point. And I was just jaw dropped. And I'm like, yeah, we got to do a book about this. Do you remember specifically how we got to the book discussion specifically, Mike?
Not 100%. I know we were like, all right, I want to do something with this. You were wrapped up in Shauna and Josh's project. So you're like, it'll be a long ways off, but I need to, you know, I need to figure it out, but I got to do something with it. And I think from there, we just kind of snowballed into, all right, it's going to be a book and we'll go from there.
Yeah. And then that's where the months, weeks, months, and then years of discussions about putting this together were formulating, you know, throughout that time. And it got really heavy, and we can get into some of that in a little bit. But yeah, that's kind of like the beginnings of it, if you will.
Well, it really means a lot to us that you guys are here and sharing all this on our podcast. Like, it's definitely a humbling experience for us to have you here and willing to share with us and our audience. So I just thank you so much.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. And how far do you want to go back and how much do you want to share, Mike?
Everything's pretty much open at this point. If you got a question, don't be afraid to ask.
Yeah, do you just want to take us back to the beginning and kind of progress through that up until now, or?
Yeah, well, I don't know if I can progress from start to finish in one go, but I'll start with the beginning story.
Okay.
I was about 3 years old. We were in Southampton, New Hampshire, at my grandmother's house, and it was some type of family function because everybody was there, extended family, aunts, uncles, and all this type of stuff. And the way my grandmother's house was set up, you kind of came in through the kitchen, then there was a dining room, and off the dining room was like a little three-season sun porch. And I walked by that sun porch, and there was like an immediate calling to get outside. Like, it can't really explain. It was just like an internal instinct. You have to get outside. I don't remember how I got outside, and like, we weren't raised like that. Like, yeah. Nobody would have disappeared without somebody noticing. And I found myself out in the driveway along with my cousin, who's about 6 months older than I am. And we're just kind of both standing in the driveway, not knowing what we're doing there or what. And the next thing we know, the woods behind my grandmother's house started glowing red, and this kind of classical saucer, you know, shaped object arose above the tree line, kind of sat there for a minute, and like just floated very slowly and very silently, and kind of parked itself right next to this big tree at the end of my grandmother's driveway. And we witnessed several lights around it, and it had like, it wasn't like you'd say light bulbs. It had like a more of a liquid flow to it and a color changing sequence. And all of a sudden the pattern in that changed. It went from a lot of like softer, whiter lights to more like reds, yellows, oranges, and started repeating a lot faster. And then kind of almost like when you open your car door at night or something, the interior light of your car goes on, there a soft like yellow light came on inside this object that revealed a row of windows right above that center bar of lights. And from there, we could see the shadow like outlines of figurine. You couldn't see any details or anything like that.
Yeah.
But you could see like the silhouettes of something there.
That's crazy.
And then in my standing memory, there was like a break. And the next thing I remember, this object was closer to the road above a telephone pole, sat there for a minute, and then just shot off up into the sky and like disappeared in the blink of an eye. And that was my standing memory for years.
It's really crazy that, like, I mean, it must have made such a significant impact. If you remember it from 3 years old, like, that's a significant occurrence in your life.
Yeah, I mean, it's really shaped my life in a lot of negative ways, socially and just self-esteem. And because you couldn't talk about it, you know?
Right. Yeah. Wow.
Yeah, like who do you go to talk about things like this?
Yeah,
well, I was just going to say Mike's family had a history of paranormal activity and talking about ghosts in their
family. That's what I was going to say. So
that was fine to talk about ghosts, but UFOs, I don't know if it felt taboo. I mean, obviously you can talk about that, Mike, but just kind of an interesting juxtaposition that ghosts are cool, but I can't really talk about this UFO stuff, you know?
So there is a connection around your family with events like this. It's more than just you.
I didn't find that out until after the fact so much. So like Nomar is saying, we grew up in a family where you could talk about ghosts and this and that. We've witnessed paranormal events together as families. The house my mother and all her sisters, my aunts, grew up in was definitely haunted. So and things like that, that was common to discuss. So it was in 2011, I started the original petition to get the historical marker here in New Hampshire for the Betty and Barney Hill case put up. And then when they put that up, the news was going like, oh, Mike got this done type thing. And that's when did you know so-and-so saw this UFO? Did you know so-and-so had this? And that's when all the little stories from the family started coming out. Once I had already been out there, it's like, I was mid to late 20s at that point. Like, I've grown up from, you know, 3 to now dealing with this on my own that I couldn't talk about it. And everybody there had something they were hiding too. So it was kind of one of those weird things.
Were you seeing like a lot of connections with other people's stories to similar to the events that you had?
Not so much, because people weren't really giving a lot of details. You know, it was like my parents had seen a UFO and pulled over to the side of the road, and a bunch of other people did, and that sort of thing. And my grandfather had this huge collection on Roswell and all this stuff. And it was little tidbits like this and that. My great uncle was kicked out of a private school in the 60s for saying he was abducted by UFO. So it was all like, it was there, just nobody talked about it.
Yeah, one of our listeners just asked if anyone else in your family had ever, right, the comments at the bottom, have they ever reported any experiences? That's crazy that your family, like, it's not just you, like, it's your family.
Yeah, it seems to be more down my mother's side, but.
That's an interesting connection. Now, have you had actual contact with extraterrestrials then? Like,
yeah, I mean, the way my memory, I have a lot of beginnings and a lot of ends. I don't have a lot of like middles. My brain blocks it out or whatever.
Of course.
But yeah, I've seen quite a few actual beings and interactions with them. Yes.
I forget the actual date on when this happened, but Mike did participate in some hypnotic regression, and it was in his adult life, but it kind of unlocked some memories of that first experience at his grandmother's house. And when there was that odd moment of the UFO kind of being in two different places in the sky really quickly, and it seemed like a bad B movie cut in his memory, he was kind of through this hypnotic regression. There was a story that unfolded where he was lying on this table, or maybe he was hovering. It's hard for him to really discern what was going on there. But at some point during that process, he felt the presence of three beings, I think one at each shoulder and one at his head. But then, Mike, there was another being of some sort that kind of walked into the room or something. Can you describe that a little bit, and with the weird arm situation and how it looked a little bit?
Yeah, that was kind of like when I first realized I was on the craft. That was before I got into that other situation. Like,
oh, okay.
There was this, I don't remember like head or feet. I kind of only remember just seeing the torso. And this thing kind of had almost like what I'd call a chicken wing, almost the way it was bent up, like almost if you had an extra bone between your like forearm and your wrist, there was an extra piece of arm there that kind of folded up. And he was kind of crunched up, and he had like olive drab brown, like colored skin, and it like not dripping wet, like you just got out of the shower, but almost had like a sheen to it.
Yeah.
And it was really weird during the regression, because I remember I felt bad for this, even though I don't know what's going on. I'm kind of, you know, in just a surreal situation. I feel bad for the thing because it looks like it's hunched. Like, that's not how it should be. Yeah, and that was, to me, I mean, it's all kind of weird. But to me, that was the weirdest thing, like, that I felt bad for it, like, after realizing that. But, yeah, from there, it kind of moved on to more of what seemed more like I was laying down or floating. I don't remember feeling anything under me, but I was, you know, definitely not like standing anymore. And there were figures all around me. I couldn't really see them. And there was a commotion by my feet. And it seemed like that's what the things by my head were trying to keep me distracted from. And then when I realized what the commotion at my feet was, it was my cousin being surrounded by these beings as well. And that's when I snapped myself out of the regression. Like, I just couldn't handle it anymore.
I mean, that sounds really traumatic. Yeah. Wow. Damn.
And
I've got like little goosebumps.
Have you spoken to your cousin about this and what you saw?
Yeah, and it only gets worse or weirder, not worse, I guess. So probably about the time this happened, so, you know, mid-20s to a little after that, this is about the first time in my life I'm actually starting to process any of this in any real direction, like beginning to accept that this is what's happened as a reality. So I called my cousin because we grew up, me and my cousin, hey, remember the time we saw the UFO at Graham's? Yeah. Mm-hmm. But it was just like a surface conversation. We never really went any deeper than that. So I told her what I remembered and then, you know, asked her to share what she remembered. And she was like, I have no memory of what you're talking about. She's like, I believe you, but I don't know what you're talking about. I'm talking about this time at Graham's when the UFO came in. And I had forgotten about it, but the minute she told me the story, it kind of clicked back in, and I started to remember. We were at my grandmother's house, and she had this big wraparound porch. And we're just sitting out there one night looking across, not across the street, but across like the lawn to the neighbor's house. Mm-hmm. And this red dot just kind of like came into the sky and started making like figure eights and like stuff a plane would do. And it looked like it put on a show for us. And when she said it, I remember, but I remember that happened around like when we were closer to 10-ish, not the other age that we both grew up for all those middle years. Say, hey, remember the UFO we saw at Graham? So there is some, you know, somebody's wrong in their memory somewhere of how we're telling it, but it does seem we both believe both occurrences happened. You know, I've grown up and I keep getting these, well, I guess you'd call more UFO type stuff. And she became very like psychic and this type stuff. And she remembers seeing the Statue of Liberty from above before she was ever on a plane and all this. So wow. It's affected both of us in curious ways, I guess you could say.
So do you remember, so you described the skin of the beings. Do you remember at all what their faces looked like?
On that instance, no. I didn't see any faces, or I don't remember any faces on that particular instance.
Now, did you later in life ever see the being's faces?
Yeah, so I had a period, I was about 8 or 9, where I was getting visited 2 to 3 times a week, maybe more.
Holy shit!
It wasn't.
Oh my god!
It wasn't every night, but it was like, as far as I can tell, a period about 6 to 9 months of pretty regular visitation. For the most part, it would be the same beings, and they would usually come through the window as a ball of light. Once they got into the room, they would kind of form into figures, and they were more than shadows, but they almost had like a smoke filled mist type thing in them. And I don't know if that's how they were projecting themselves to me, or if that's just what my brain's allowing me to remember. And it seemed more like a school type thing. There were two males who seemed not militaristic, like angry or violent or anything, but just very strict. Like he needs to learn this stuff. One who was, a female who had a really motherly effect of connection with me. And on a couple occasions, a small boy child. But one night I found myself, I looked down and I could see the back stairs to my house from like the sky. Wow. And I kind of And I kind of pulled my head back to see what was going on. And I just saw blood on this like white sheet. It was a robe. And then it turned out it was this female being carrying me down. It was she was wearing. I don't remember how we got back into the house, but like I said before, that it was kind of militaristic in the sense that everything had a time, place, like everything was thought out ahead of time type thing. When we're in the room this time, this is the first time I ever saw them like panicked. And this is the first time I didn't see them as shadowy figures. This is the first time I actually saw them. And they kind of look like your stereotypical gray, like the alien face you see, except there were a lot a softer white, maybe with a hint of like blue or purple tone to it. But it wasn't like pitted like some of these other pictures you see. It was almost more porcelain-like. And the males basically looked the same as female, except she was just maybe like a foot shorter. And my impression of the situation is like there was an abduction type scenario that they weren't involved in, that they stepped in and got me out of.
Yeah, like there might have been another faction or species that was trying to take Mike, and these good guys, if you will, lack of a better term, intervened and saved Mike from whatever that more nefarious abduction was. That's the feeling he got from it. So weird.
So you think that they're more than one type of alien then? There's a bigger picture to all this?
I need a break. You talk.
just in Mike's stories alone, he's encountered, it seems like, multiple different species of aliens that all look different. And we can get into some of those stories, but one of them kind of looked like the creature from the Black Lagoon. One of them, he saw like a group of them at one point, which could have been a screen memory. It gets weird, but they looked like little trolls. And then he saw another one that was wearing a t-shirt and it made him laugh. And it kind of looked like ET, you know?
Yeah.
So he's definitely had a gamut of activity and beings that he's sighted.
This is kind of random, but I want to take a minute to one of our listeners named Carol has been complimenting y'all's beards. So,
oh yeah, I threw that up.
Y'all are doing a great job in the beard game.
That's what I was telling Mike before I got on here. I'm like, dude, I'm jealous of that beard. I've been trying to get mine to that length, but I haven't got there yet.
Makes me feel like I need a fake beard for these recordings.
We should do that next episode. Yeah, if you're listening to the podcast platform, you'll have to check us out on YouTube. We are bearded up here, except for Sabrina, so she's going to have to work on that.
Give me like 20 years, and it might be a different story.
There was a question from Donnie Chow, and I forget the answer here, but he asked if the t-shirt that alien was wearing, like, did it have an emblem or did it say anything? Do you remember that, Mike?
I think I just saw it as a plain t-shirt, and it didn't look like E.T. It looked like a regular gray. It just reminded me of E.T.
Right.
And what happened was it was in the room, and it kind of, like, woke me up, and I think I was in a period of, like, there's highs and lows of activity, and what happened was, I was like, if we're going to do this, like, let's just get it done, and I reached out my hand instead of, like, fighting it, and said, let's just go, and we were walking down the stairs, and we got right to the bottom of the stairs, and I'm like, oh, I usually don't get to remember this part, am I going to get to remember this time? And it looked at me like, you're aware of what's going on right now? I was like, yeah. Am I going to get to remember this time? And like, instant blackout.
Oh my God. That's wild.
Now, going forward from them situations, have you
That's
been
like
more
actual,
aware?
Like, whole ass goosebumps right now. That is like, oh, that's crazy.
It is. Now, I was saying, going forward, were you more aware or perceptive to what was going on after that?
I don't know if aware is the right word. More paranoid, yes. But yeah, like, it's been 2 weeks, maybe a week and a half since the last thing that's happened. It's not like, sometimes it's not just like being, sometimes it's just like, I was out in the woods, I camp a lot, and
yeah,
just these balls of light showed up in the woods, like spotlighting the ground.
I was just chilling watching something stupid on Netflix, and Mike sends me a video via FB Messenger out of nowhere, and it's him sitting in the middle of the woods, and there's these lights that are in the sky. And, you know, the skeptic will look at it and be like, oh, that's just light in the sky. It's probably an airplane. It's probably this. It's probably that. And while that's possible, given Mike's context and the way he was feeling, it didn't seem normal. Then he sent me another video or a picture, and it was showing what that same area looked like during the day. And the tree cover was so heavy, meaning you could barely see the sky. And he was filming this at night. And so to see that light with such heavy tree cover just shows how bright it really was in that area. And again, this was just a week ago, you know, like it's wild.
I'm kind of curious, Mike, have you, like, you live in New Hampshire and you grew up in New Hampshire. Have you lived anywhere, like, in any different states in between?
No. Okay. I mean, I visited for like a week or something, but yeah, mm-hmm. No, I've always lived here.
When you visited, did you have similar experiences?
Not that I recall. But
so like, they know where you are. Like, they know where your address is.
I mean, I've moved. That's kind of one of the... We had lived in the same town, but in the same landlord. I was married at the time. We had kids that were young. But one was a boy, one was a girl. And it's like, all right, this little two bedroom's not going to cut it anymore. We got to, you know, get a bigger apartment. And a landlord finally had one open up. Mm-hmm. And so we took that. We moved in. And like, in this time of year in the fall, when the leaves are off the trees, you could probably look from one apartment to the other and see it. It's not like we moved that far. And I found myself standing at the old apartment in the middle of the night, just outside the door, kind of just waiting there, not kind of sure, but it was a very clear memory. I remember like pulling a cough drop out of my flannel pocket and sucking on it. Like, I'm sitting there waiting for a bus or something.
That's wow.
And the next thing I know, from the other corner of the house, this basketball sized ball of light, just I see it, that like we make a connection, and as soon as we make that connection, it starts rising upward as it's coming at me. And for whatever my reason, my brain goes, oh my god, it's a big dog, it's about to jump on you. So I kind of turned and shouldered it and waited for this thing to hit me. And then when nothing hit me, I kind of opened my eyes, and I found myself looking down at the lawn from about like 15 feet in the air, just surrounded in blue light. And the next thing I know, I woke up in bed screaming.
Wow.
Wow. Now, do you have any like thoughts or ideas as to why you are being, messed with so often? Is there any
thoughts there? I do believe it runs in bloodlines. You know, I don't believe it's anything special about me. I believe they've picked this bloodline, and for whatever reason, I don't have an answer for that.
Now, Rachel Newton asked a question about all of these incidents occurring in the same area. It happened all in New Hampshire, and it seemed to follow Mike to the different locations where he lived. Like Sabrina was saying, it kind of knows where he is. So wherever he's staying...
I've always lived in New Hampshire, but we haven't always lived in the same part of New Hampshire.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And it's a big state. But do you get, like, I guess, a vibe of familiarity when you have these encounters? Like, is it the same entities that are interacting with you?
Sometimes I believe that's true, and sometimes no.
Okay.
And Blue Crossroads asked about, have his kids reported anything? And absolutely, Mike's daughter has had some incidents. I don't know if you want to go into the one that was at that campsite.
Oh, yeah, that was which campsite? The one on the mountain or the other campsite?
There were multiple?
Yeah.
You should probably tell both, but maybe lead with the one where she was with her friend and they were walking through the woods.
Yeah, so they were what? 12, maybe 13. We had this nice little lakefront campground campsite, and cell service was horrible. You kind of had to like walk back out to the beach parking lot to get any service. And you know, they're girls. They wanted to walk out, check their phones, do the bathroom for the last time, you know, wash your face and do all that crap. And it's like, yeah, go ahead. She's been in that park as long as she could walk. I mean, it wasn't a big deal for me to let her go off. And we were in the site's also the only remote site they have. You have to actually hike down a trail to get to it. It's not like one of these you just pull in with your car and load your
And jump right out. Yeah.
Right. But yeah, like I said, it was like, yeah, you're fine. You know where you're going and all that. And so they went out and they did what they're going to do. They're coming back. They heard an owl. And the next thing they know, they were across the campground.
Both of them.
And she's like, both of them. And she's like, Dad, there's no way. We couldn't have, like, just the trail in the dark with no lights. Like, there's no way. It's all, this lake used, it was a volcano at one point. And when it blew up, this is, you know, the center is the lake. But there's huge boulders everywhere, like massive, just, you know, it's not navigatable by the dark unless you really know the terrain. And she's like, there's no way we just happened to get that lost without knowing we were lost. And the funny part is the only way they actually made it back is I had one of these little LED like alien head things sitting on the picnic table, and that was what they saw as a light to kind of guide them back. But
and the that irony. Same
In that same spot, I don't know if the same weekend, I don't think it was, probably the same year, but I had gotten up, and then my daughter had woken up. She's like, I gotta go to the bathroom. I'm like, then go. She's like, well, I can't, because I need her to go with me. It's like, whatever, you know? And so the next thing we know, there's this really loud just humming, and it just gets more intense, until her friend wakes up and gets out of the tent, like, what the hell is that? And we're like, we don't know. And then the same, this one didn't involve my daughter, but same site. That's when me and a girlfriend at the time actually had a pretty significant encounter where, like, the light came into the woods and shone through the tent. And you'd think I'd stop going there, but. No. But yeah, so the other time we hiked up to a mountain on purpose to try to do like some CE5 stuff. Me, her, and a couple other researchers, and we managed to call something in, or it knew we were going to be there, however you want to look at it. And she had an experience with us there as well.
Now, I was going to say, Laura is asking if you've had any experiences with owls.
Yeah, no. One that was kind of like really weird, but I'm outside all the time, so it's hard to tell what's an owl and what's not. The occasion that it was like, this is more than an owl, was because I'd had other experiences in this one stretch of road, including albino deer and a craft.
Wow. Yeah, the owl is a interesting thing. There's a lot of, you know, Native American lore around owls and the Wendigos and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Especially up in that area, and that's like the First Nation area.
Mike also had an encounter. I don't know if this is the same house you're at now, but he was at his brother's house at one point during the years, again, adult years, and there was this strange animal that he came across at his brother's house. Can you describe what that looked like?
I can describe it. I don't know if I can describe what it looked like, because I don't know what the hell it yeah. actually looks like, but it was almost like a mink or a weasel type body in the front, and then kind of like fattened out to like a cat or a raccoon. It had more of a raccoon's tail. So my brother had just had this small little, not even a porch, but it was like closed in. But I guess you couldn't smoke in the house. I could smoke out there. So I'd make my coffee in the morning, go out there and have my cigarette while I put my boots on and stuff before I went to work.
Nature's laxative.
And I see this thing walk up on the sidewalk, and it stops right outside and looks right at me. And I look at it, and I'm like, I don't know what you are, man, but it's way too early, and you're freaking me out. As soon as I said it like acted like it understood and just walked off. And then I was like, shit, was that the right thing to do? Or like, should I talk to this thing? Or I don't know, but yeah.
Kind of sounds that's like something you'd find on Plum Island.
Holy shit, that's weird.
Monster, man. That long, skinny body and almost into like a cat.
I mean, that's too early to deal with that shit. sorry, no thanks. Coming in later.
During the writing process of the book, Mike took me on a tour of all of the areas that he had encounters. And, you know, so we went to his grandmother's house, which I think is owned by somebody else now, right, Mike?
Yes, correct.
Yeah. And he took me to these other, you know, areas, and it was surreal for me, you know, being the interviewer, but also having this bond with Mike. It was just very surreal to be in these locations with Mike. And I made sure to take pictures of the areas, and all of those pictures are in the book. But another piece to this whole extraterrestrial encounters is the mental health toll that it took on Mike.
And
when you're talking about mental health, PTSD, anxiety, depression, now, regardless of what the catalyst is, a lot of people experience those types of mental health issues. Mike's catalyst is these extraterrestrials, but all of those mental health issues are real, you know?
Of course.
And so a big part of the book is the coping, what he was feeling during these times.
I'm going to let you finish, Nomar, but just to interject real quick, this is kind of like, where the book took its own life, but like me and Nomar already at this point, I trusted him. He trusted me. We had a pretty solid bond, but this is like where the book went into like a war buddy situation. Like we'd been through something together and really defined the tone of the book.
Yeah, it really did. And I struggle with my own anxiety and depression and can get into some really dark areas way more often than I want. And in, you know, I have taken and continue to take steps to try to make that better. So is Mike. But because Mike was so raw and genuine in what he was sharing, not just his experiences, but his mental health issues as well, I shared my mental health issues throughout the book. So there's like these three layers of things that are going on throughout the book, where it's the extraterrestrial encounters, it's Mike's mental health journey on top of that. And then in the background is my mental health journey. And from where the book starts to the real heaviness of the middle and towards the end, and then the hope that you feel right at the end of the book, with the last paragraph of the book, the hope that you feel at the end of it, I don't know. I'm just so surprised that we got there, because the book goes into some really dark places, and I'd like to talk about some of that if we could, if Mike's comfortable with that.
Yeah, go for it.
Yeah. Well,
I mean, I'm sorry. May I interject a little bit? Just for a second. Mental health is so important. Like, I mean, Dylan and I talk about our own whatever we're going through all the time. And it's honestly wild to think that someone could have these experiences and not have trauma intertwined with it. Like that, it just sounds like a very like it makes sense, you know?
Absolutely.
And yeah. as obvious as a statement that is, it's not what we intended to do. You know, we set out, we didn't want it to be like every other UFO book, but at the same time, it was going to be like every other UFO book. Like, this is what happened to him here, 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 and here. You know, we never expected it to take on this form.
Yeah. And oddly, it's I don't think intentional, but it appears to be a bit of a taboo subject within ufology. Like, Mike and I are ensconced in ufology, and all of the books we've read from researchers, there's not a whole lot of talk about the mental health aspect of it.
Mm-hmm.
And it was really important to us to really let that part of it shine, let it be raw and dirty. And honest, and to try to normalize that type of conversation, not only in just regular life, but within ufology as well, because it just feels like it's not talked about enough from these experiencers. And it appears to us there's just so many researchers and authors that are just, it's almost like quantity over quality. And it's important to us that the quality, and not just the writing style or whatever, but what's being talked about is there, you know, and that's really important to the two of us. But getting back to specifically Mike, I believe you were in your marriage and you were realizing that it was falling apart. And I think that's one of the first steps where you realize, like, this is really affecting my life. I'm not just a dude that's seeing UFOs. I am being affected in my daily life because of this.
I mean, how wouldn't you be?
Yeah. Yeah. I agree. And I'm sure other people are, and they're just not talking about it. And that sucks. You know?
Yeah. Honestly. Yeah. Like, you know, there's people that don't even believe in extraterrestrials or UFOs, but I think adding that, the human aspect, the reality of like what an individual goes through in this kind of experience makes it all the more credible, in my opinion.
Yeah, I'm sure by adding that touch to your book, it opened doors for many other people to come forward and talk about their, you know, encounters or abduction stories or.
Absolutely.
You know, it probably opened them right up to you guys. Has that?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I don't know that we've gotten a bad review. I think we both, because of our own anxieties and this and that, we always both like wait for the bottom to fall out. Our mind instantly goes to what's the worst that can happen. And I'm sure it'll come someday, but I don't think we've gotten a bad review. We actually got the opposite, where people like, oh my God, like tell this story.
Yeah. It's been amazing what people have said. And it blows my mind. What am I trying to say here? I'm a person that has a hard time having a good time.
And, yeah, I can relate. Yeah.
And Mike and I, during one of the big long interviews that we did where I was recording him, you know, I'm a researcher. And so part of me is like, oh my God, this is amazing. You know, like, I can't believe the stuff that's been happening to this guy. And I can't wait to write all this down and, you know, put it in a book. But another part of me is like, I'm crying with him. He's telling me these really heavy stories and we're having to take breaks. And the reality really set in for me in that second long form interview at just how raw he was being. And I think it was the first time that he wanted to take a break just from the heaviness of it all. And we went outside.
I think we had just listened to the regression.
Oh yeah, that's right. That's right. And you probably hadn't listened to that in a long time.
No, I'm surprised I have a copy. I thank God I downloaded it at some point because I destroyed the original copy. Like, I've never listened to that again.
Yeah.
I mean, it sounds like it. You guys really transformed documenting these experiences from, a commodity to a survivor story.
Yeah. And I'm really glad you put it that way because Mike is truly a survivor. I mean, we're all survivors every day, but Mike is truly a survivor. It got so bad. What was it? It was before the pandemic, right, Mike? Your decision.
But, it's 2019. Well before that.
Yeah. But it had gotten to the point where Mike had decided to take his own life. And Mike, can you get into kind of like that night and that process and what you were thinking?
I don't know if it was that night. It was a lot of ongoing nights. But what had happened was we have a local big UFO festival that I'm heavily involved in. And it had ended that last night. You know, I went out to dinner with, you know, some of the speakers, some of these guys, like huge names in the UFO field. And then when it was done, I was like, I'm done now. Now I just have a year of fucking bullshit to deal with, you know, and that's my life. Like, my one time to pretend to be happy, you know. And that's the thing, because I was happy. I love doing that stuff. I love doing this stuff. I love being around those people. But my brain was not telling me that. My brain is being like, this sucks. You're done, kid. You know?
Yeah.
And a lot of other things were going wrong in life at the moment, too. And it just kind of compiled. And I just had made the decision, like, it was done. It wasn't going to happen, like, that day. It was... But I took in the steps to say this. I knew where it was going to happen. I knew what it was going to happen. Like, I picked out the beer I was going to have, my last meal. Like, I planned the perfect date with the Grim Reaper, is, I guess, a good way to put it.
Wow. So what stopped you?
A mix of fate and tragedy, I guess. It was kind of like, you know, I wasn't going to do this on a cheap beer or this or that. I wanted my favorite beer and all this stuff. Yeah. So it was like, I got to wait for, you know, some money to come in and that sort of thing. And so I was in this really dark place in my head, but still did like semi-normal human things. And I picked up Facebook and was scrolling it, and I saw this post. I'm like, oh, this has got to be a hack. This can't be right. And it turned out one of my very close friends had died naturally. And then once I saw kind of like, once it hit me and how it affected me and the outpouring and support and how it affected everybody else, I was just like, I can't do that to anybody.
Yeah, that's tough. Wow.
A tragedy saved Mike's life, and it's just ironic and sad and amazing. And it was, you know, I cried when he told me about it.
Yeah, that's a tearjerker, man. That's
But thank you, Mike, for always being willing to share that story. There's not a lot of people that that will do that. And this is the type of stuff that I was getting from him and just how genuine and raw he was being. That the only thing that I could do as his author is to tell the story as accurately as possible and to share parts of myself that he was so, you know, willing to share. It just felt only right. And, you know, and that's what we're talking about, where this book just like transformed into.
Well, and I mean, my parents knew some of the UFO stuff, but like not to the extent, because I always internalized all that, you know, And then so the book finally comes out, and not only is it just the shock of all this UFO stuff, then my parents have to read this part of the book too. And it was a scary decision to include it, but it was the right thing to do because hopefully it helps somebody.
Yeah.
It's hard like being that open when you're like, I don't know, I get the vibe that you're a very kind and empathetic sort of person, Mike, and when you think about sharing that, you wonder, like, is this going to hurt my parents? Is this going to make them feel bad? Because, damn, I don't want to make my parents feel bad. It's not their fault I feel this way. Mm. But then you're also like, but this is my story, and it deserves to be known. It's just, it's so brave of you. And I have so much admiration for you and so much love. Like, I'm very grateful that you're here and, I mean, gracing us with being on our show. I'm so thankful that you are you.
Yeah, it's a good thing you put it in there. You're probably going to help a lot of people just by reading that and seeing that you came out on the other side.
Yeah, and some of our feedback or Amazon reviews or, you know, wherever we're getting feedback, they are thanking Mike, and they're kind of walking on eggshells on why they're thanking him, you know?
Yeah.
But a lot of it, I feel, is because of this, like, you know, it's almost the climax of the book, like this moment of him almost ending his life, and just the relief in the thankfulness that he and I get from that feedback. Like, that's what it's all about right there. You know, if Mike can save one life, I mean, it was worth what we went through to write that book, you know?
Yeah. Well, yeah. The other point is we didn't know if it was like a Nomar's end as an author, like career suicide. Like, nobody's thrown that in a UFO book or with that twist. And I'm like, we already stepped away from a publisher. Like, we kind of said we did everything our way, not the way anybody else did it. And hopefully for the right reasons, but.
Yeah, and he and I were in lockstep along the way. I kept checking in with him. Like, I had some financial issues with what my publisher wanted to do. So that was like one piece of it. The other piece of it, though, and the more important piece, was they wanted total control on everything up to like what the cover art is and what the title of the book is. And Mike and I were just unwilling to budge. And that might make the publisher sound, you know, like a monster. And they are definitely not, because once I finally declined to have my book put out by them, I was still under contract with them, which means I can't write anything else until that contract runs up. I can't put anything else out. So in making this decision, I had to tell Mike, like, hey, dude, if we pass, if we say no, your story might not come out for another 2 years. Like, at this moment right now, it still wouldn't be out. I believe it's next summer, right, Mike? It would have come out.
Something like that.
Like that. So, you know, it wouldn't even have come out yet. And we don't know what exactly that narrative would have looked like. So, one thing amazing that the publisher did was they let me out of the contract so Mike and I could put out the book the exact way that we wanted to. And, you know, forever grateful for them for allowing us to do that. They're really good people. They're in the paranormal community. They're paranormal people and they get it. So that was really cool of them. And, but the big point is Mike and I just refused to compromise. And we checked in constantly. I was sending him, you know, chapter samples just to make sure I was getting things right. And we were just lockstep the whole way. And it was such an experience.
Yeah. No. And then like, the whole world kind of came into this pandemic thing, and like the month after, you know, as we're trying to release his book, like
Yeah, I think I technically finished writing it in like the end of January 2020. And then comes a little bit more editing, and then there's, you know, making sure everything's put together, and you got to order proof copies of the book. Well, I'd like to anyways. I want to make sure everything looks good. So yeah. We had picked a release date already before the pandemic hit. And we just said, fuck it. And we're going to put it out regardless of the pandemic hitting. And that might have hurt us in the long run, just in book sales. But it also hurts us, and we want more people to know his story, hopefully to help them, you know. It was just another piece that we're like, fuck it. This is when we want it to come out. Pandemic be damned, publisher be damned. This is what we want to do. It was just so, so important to us, you know.
That's so great. Yeah. And I just wanted to chime in for a second here. Now, if you're joining us live right now, we do have our call-in number scrolling across the bottom of the screen. If you're listening from podcast format, be sure to check our YouTube channel, Creepy Unsolved, you know, every Thursday when we go live, and you'll have a chance to call in and talk to us and the guest. So if there's anyone out there who wants to call in or they have questions for Mike or Nomar, you know, feel free to drop them in the comments or give us a call.
I have a question, and this is kind of going a little further back into what we've talked about, but Mike, would you mind explaining a little bit more about Betty and Barney Hill and their UFO experience?
Yeah, real briefly, I guess. So it was September of 1961. They were an interracial couple, which was not widely accepted in those days at all. They had never really gotten a honeymoon after they got married. So they went up to Niagara Falls and Montreal for the weekend. And then as they were driving back through the White Mountains of New Hampshire, they started seeing something kind of tracking them and this sort of thing. They didn't come out and say they were abducted. That fact came out much like the Allagash abductions after the fact. It was through the hypnosis and this that kind of brought out that something more had happened. But with just some of the physical evidence that was around and the whole star map thing and this and that, there were, and just the type of people they were and the fact that they were an interracial couple during that time frame, you wouldn't have drawn any more attention to yourself than you had to. There's no way you would have come out and, you know, made a claim as seemingly crazy as this at that time unless it had happened. And even then, they're not really the ones who shared it with the public. They did do some speaking about it, like with their local church group, but it was really the Boston Traveler, when they leaked the story, that gave us the story we all know today.
Okay.
But yeah, that was a really short version because I could, yeah, go for 2 hours on it.
I believe you could. That's how Nomar, you know, kind of introduced me to you, because I was talking to Nomar about coming on here to do an episode on that topic.
Right. Well, that's what he told me. And I'm like, why the hell did he pick this? They're a better story.
No, your story is great in itself.
Yeah, don't sell yourself short.
Seriously.
Just if you don't mind me fanboying a little bit, Mike, could you again do like a brief recap of the Exeter incident? Just a brief one.
Yeah. So that was 1965, Labor Day weekend in Exeter, New Hampshire. Norman Muscarello was walking home from his girlfriend's house in Amesbury. He was just about home. He only had a couple miles to go. And on this big field next to him, he just saw this big swooping red light. And it kind of came down at him. He hid in a ditch or fell in the ditch, depending on which version of the story you want to go. Pounded on the neighbor's door at like 1 in the morning. Nobody answered. Saw a car come down the road, ran out in the middle of the street, made it stop. They brought him to the police station, told the dispatcher what had happened. One of the other patrolmen had already had a report like this earlier in the night, so he was interested. So they go out there, another patrolman joins them, and all three of them witness this object at like a range of 100 feet. One of the patrolmen was ex Air Force, like knows the planes that are out there, this and that. And they just go through a gamut of, you know, denial from the Pentagon to the Air Force, Pease Air Force Base and all this stuff. But they finally got an official result that, you know, the Air Force couldn't identify what they saw that night.
Yeah, I feel like the plane thing is what everyone wants to turn to when you see something like you don't know what it is, like it's an airplane. And they try to base that off of like people just don't know what aircrafts look like, which is completely far-fetched in my opinion.
Yeah,
so
I agree.
If you live near an Air Force base, you're going to know what planes look like. It's just, and I think drones are going to be the new excuse.
I feel like they'd be able to match like a movement of a UFO closer than an airplane.
I mean, even the fucking weird ones, like even like weird new experimental shit, it's still going to move like an airplane. Like that's just how like our version of physics works. Like there's nothing that's going to defy that in the military inventory.
No, you can even, I don't even think you can withhold like the G forces with the stop and turns and zigzags and the movements.
I mean, stuff like that, you can't duplicate, not with a human pilot.
No, we couldn't even withstand that, you know, physically, I don't believe.
But I do think some of the opposite's true, that maybe some of these crafts, no matter wherever they come from, might be mimicking aircraft lights because they know.
Oh, absolutely. That makes sense.
I think I've actually seen some video of something like that. It just sparked my memory where there's a UFO and a plane starts going by in the video, and the UFO kind of turns into like blinking airplane lights. And then as the airplane goes by and it's out of sight, the UFO goes back to its UFO shape.
Yeah, I would like to believe that these visitors would try to mimic, you know, airplane flights and, you know, the appearance of them to kind of cloak themselves and try to not seem out of this world, you know, depending on what they're trying to do.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think that will probably be it for tonight, but I do want to do that episode on Betty and Barney here soon. I am scheduled out a little bit, but we'll get you back on here. But yeah, I'm very grateful for both of you coming on here and sharing your stories, and you know, Mike, for sharing your experiences with us. I feel like everyone here and in the chat really connected with you.
Yeah, honestly, thank you. I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
Oh, no, I just wanted to say thank you so much. We're so grateful that you're here and that you're just comfortable sharing all of this stuff.
Oh, no, I'm not comfortable at all. It's
Well, we appreciate you stepping out of your comfort zone. I know there's like there's a lot of people that listen to this podcast that, you know, even if they haven't had necessarily an extraterrestrial or alien or UFO or whatever experience, like they've had some sort of fucked up experience in their life, and you just being here is a guiding light, and it is much appreciated.
Thank you. And Nomar, if they want to know more than the scattered details we've said tonight, where can they find it?
Thanks, Mike. And my camera's freaking out. I'm sorry. But you can go to allmylinks.com/Slevic. And there you'll be able to find Granite Skies and all my other books. Also, if you just Google Granite Skies, his book will come up. So,
sounds great. Yeah. Thank you guys once again. You know, thank you everyone who joined us in the chat. I know it's been like a 2-week hiatus, but we do want to try to get on here at least once a week. And we are looking to incorporate, you know, live call-ins. So if you have a question for us or our guest going forward, you know, right around that 1 hour mark, we're going to be throwing up that number. So be sure to give us a call. But, you know, that will be all for tonight. You know, thank you guys once again, and we're signing off.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Creepy Unsolved. If you enjoyed this episode and would like to hear more like it, please leave us a rating and review on whatever platform you are listening from. This will help our podcast grow. Also, be sure to subscribe, follow, and share the podcast. If you have an interesting story or would like to be a guest on a future episode of Creepy Unsolved, please reach out to us through Instagram or Facebook at Creepy Unsolved, or send us an email at creepyunsolvedmedia@gmail.com. We look forward to hearing from you soon.